Sweat baby, sweat baby. Sex is a Texas drought. Me and you do the kind of stuff that only Prince would sing about. So put your hands down my pants, and I bet you feel nuts. Yes, I'm Cisco. Yes, I'm eager, and you're getting two thumbs up. You've had enough of two hand touch. You wanna rough? You're out of bounds. I want you smothered. Want you covered like my Waffle House hash browns. Is that good? Is that 10 seconds?
How do you know every single lyric there, man? That's like a 20-plus-year-old song or something.
Oh yeah, my buddies and I used to sing in high school all the time. My man. One buddy in particular, really good guy,
makes
funny
me want
guy.
To put on a dog suit now and walk around the city.
Monkey suit. They were in monkey suits. Oh, yeah, monkey yeah, suit.
Yeah.
And his dad used to blare the song. So what? It was came out in 99, 2000. So something we were like that, 6, 7 years old. I was 6, 7 years old when it happened. And or when it came out. My buddy's dad used to pull up to the elementary school, windows down, blaring the song. And, you know, yelling is like, Matthew, you know, and, you know, you'd be embarrassed, but it's a good time.
And that's how you remember this
exactly.
song.
Exactly.
Nobody sung that one on the show.
No, but no, hey, yeah. Nobody, well, I'm glad to be the first.
I would remember that one, man.
It's kind of the go-to. I know the lyrics very well, and it's in my comfort zone. You don't have to hit so many pitches, right?
Thank you. I appreciate Stafford for you doing that, man. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And we know we met through Erica.
No, Liz.
Liz. That's right. That's Pia. That's right. Yes, yeah. So I talk to Liz all the time, and mostly all through digital DMs or something like that.
Oh, really? Right? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Right. How do you know Liz?
I know her. She's my dad's girlfriend. She's my dad's partner.
Okay. Yeah, all right. That's how the connection is.
Yeah. So
I
then
get
Liz
it now.
Figured, you know, you get me in touch with you. And
yeah. We got the same mindset regarding what's going on in the world.
Yeah. No kidding.
Well, what's going on in our backyard mostly.
Yeah, exactly. I think you and I have the same mindset, to be honest with you.
I think people are kind of waking up to a bunch of shit, but we're going to talk about construction. We're going to talk about construction, right? So let me share some information. So Stav Grekos is here, www.towerline.ca, info@towerline.ca. So you're mostly doing high rise or is it low rise?
Yeah, so right now I'm trying to stick commercial and it's commercial condos. Ultimately what I'm trying to do right now with this new business, it's about a year old. So I left my former business. I literally walked away from my old business. No buyout, no nothing.
How long were you there?
4 years. I was with my business partner for 4 years.
And you just left?
I left, yeah. He was pushing it in another direction, like mainly demo, which I didn't want to do, among other things. So I figured, you know.
Why was he so focused on? I know there's a lot of money in demo. And
it's a lot of money, quick and easy, right?
Yeah.
Because construction, there's a lot more moving parts.
Yeah.
Right? It's a lot more, I don't know, I feel a skill involved. I say that lightly.
No,
I know
there is, but there's also a skill in demo too.
There is, for sure. But it wasn't what I set out to do. I want to build something, admire, not remove it, you know. So anyways, long story short, he was pushing mainly for the demo. The bigger we got, the busier I became, less busy, you know,
the less so busy he became.
It seemed like that, right? So
the balance of construction was kind of off?
Yeah, to say the least, right? Now again, either way,
4 years is a long time though.
It is
longer than some marriages.
Yeah. So I guess I'm proud of something, right? So anyways, that being said, I decided it's best and easy to jump ship. And then
and
just
he was cool. Everything's cool.
Yeah, everything's good. Everything's amicable. Everything's
okay.
You know,
good.
If that's
and then
the right
you
word.
Started Towerline.
Towerline, yes, exactly. Towerline Building Group. So that mainly I want to focus on. If you know, within the next year, do commercial condos. You know, go in, go back to base, and then build a couple offices in the front, warehouse space in the back. Also, getting into offices, doing office buildings,
commercial
and whatnot.
Spaces.
Exactly, commercial spaces. If they want a brand new office. You know, if it's a bare floor or an existing office, bring it back to base and then rebuild it however the tenant or client wants, right?
So you tell me, Stav, like, I can only imagine the residential condo world construction-wise is looking at a casket right now.
Yeah, in terms of what it's
just workflow, scope, how much there is out there with a lot of union members at home.
Right, right.
But commercial's not, though. Commercial's still thriving. Everything
seems like it, you know. Yeah. But it's the thing is, you ask, it's six of one, half dozen of the other, right? You ask one person, everything's dying.
It's amazing how
ask
that works. Person, because I could talk to somebody from one end of the country to the other end of the country, and I'm like, some are thriving, some are not.
Yeah.
So what's really going on? That's why I had a rant recently about the tariffs. I was like,
right.
Really? We're going to wake up about tariffs now, and we don't want to complain about 54% being taxed on everything else that we've been doing, and then plus another tax that's coming April 20th?
Yeah, exactly.
Really?
Yeah.
So it's just, I think that construction, if anything, you get into it, you understand that the work is there, go get it.
Yeah, exactly. That's why right now, no job is beneath me. Like I'm even doing small service jobs, patch jobs, right? Because before I had employees, now I'm back on my own, literally doing
everything.
So
you're on the tools.
I'm on the tools, yeah. Yeah, that's how I started, right? Obviously,
I know, but you built a business, you got started. Obviously, you were getting off the tools doing that business for 4 years, yeah. And now you have no problem going back on the tools.
It's kind of out of necessity, right? So yeah. It's either, you know, because I had to restart completely, even financially.
No, I got a lot of respect for that. That makes a lot of sense, because most people in construction just want to keep on going up. They don't realize that there's a down.
I definitely want to, believe me, but yeah. You know, just necessity, right? Got to do what I got to do. I started it on the tools and restart. Like, I don't know. Do I get a loan? Do I, you know what I'm saying? I don't know. I don't know what I do know that I don't know, you know,
yeah,
to I got say the it. Least. What's right, wrong? I don't know. I'm just trying to right now keep my head above water and keep pushing forward.
You started with employees yet or no?
No, I have guys that I could call to give me a hand here or there, but nothing on payroll. Right. And again, it's just a matter of getting a steady flow, because I used to say my employees made more money than I did.
Because first of all, your employees do make more money than you do.
Exactly.
When you're an entrepreneur and you start like the lean years.
Yeah. It's not sexy. A lot of people think it's, you know, entrepreneurship, you know, it's sexy. It's not.
They compare it to all the ones that are hugely successful, which are single digit percentages.
Right. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I remember when I worked, I went back to school, my second program, and I was in a co-op. Had a co-op position, and one of the guys was saying, tell me the difference between a professional gambler and a general contractor, because it's kind of the same thing, right?
Just different tables that you sit at.
Exactly.
Yeah, right? It's the same thing, basically. It's a good way to look at it.
Yeah. And then, you know, you hear rumors, or they were saying some of these larger companies, the first 6 months of the year, they're at a loss. They only make everything up the last two. So it's one of those, like, okay, maybe I had a little bit more of a romantic image of what construction was.
So then why do it, Steph?
Ultimately, I wanted to get into developments. I've always wanted to get into developments. That's what I set out to do. I was very fascinated with that when I was in high school. But
lots
I figured
of rules, lots of regs, lots of.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I've come to realize, you know, I enjoy the wheeling and dealing, so to speak, you know, which is ironic because. I don't care to deal with people and there's certain bullshit, I guess you could say, to say the least. But anyways, I figured construction is a good stepping stone, right? Because if you're an investor and I asked you for your money so I could develop this property,
yep.
I want to be able to look you in the eye and pretty much give you a solid answer, or give it to any one of your questions, right? Or I remember telling my dad like how I wanted to know how to do every aspect of the job. And he was saying, just kind of take the Henry Ford approach, right? It was a story or a section in the book Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill.
Yeah.
And there was a lawyer that was trying to prove that Henry Ford was ignorant, right? And in court, he said, you know, he's asking him all these technical questions about the Model T or the motor and this and that. So finally, you know, irritated, he said, listen, I have on my desk, I have a box, like a phone box or whatever. I hit this button, I could summon my head engineer. This button, I could call my lawyer. This button, you know what I'm saying? And that's a good approach, but I want to know a little bit about everything, right? Before I could move to the next
just phase. Enough so you're a little bit dangerous.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Right. Which has paid in dividends, because I've had times where, you know, shit hit the fan. It's like, oh, fuck it. Well, I'm going to hang the drywall, or I'm going to lay the tile. Right. So when I was going through school, my college programs, I tried working with every different contractor or sub trade that I can. Like, I've done every shit job under the sun.
Yeah, we all have, right?
Exactly.
And you did it for a reason, for the exact reasons that you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that most people that get into construction should be doing that.
I agree. But it's like the whole, you know, I don't want to be good at what I want to do. I don't want to be great. I want to be the best.
Yeah.
Right? And you got to put in your time. You know.
But you also, by doing that, you discover where your strengths are.
Very much so.
So then you could hire and look for the workforce that you need and their strengths.
Yep,
exactly. And then implement that into your project. And then all of a sudden, you're a much stronger project or a company at that time, right?
Exactly.
That's the objective here, right?
Right. So I'm trying to keep my head keep my peripheries open, to pay attention, like maintain my situational awareness. Like, I don't want to be going down a path and realize years down the road, ooh, I shouldn't have done that. Maybe I should have.
But the mistakes are part of construction, right?
You just want to make smaller
mistakes than the previous guy, right? That's all it is.
Exactly, right?
Simple as that. I think a lot of the younger generation doesn't want to make any mistakes. They think that they just get in on the high horse at first. And I'm
yeah,
like,
exactly.
That's not construction, man. That's not how it works.
No, man. It's kick or, you know, sink or swim, right? Yeah. If you feel like you're sinking, kick harder kind
you
of
gotta
thing.
You got to get some shit dirty. You got to get some stuff. You got to make some mistakes.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? But if you're smart, reach out to people that have done it.
Exactly.
And ask them how not to do it.
Yeah, and that's what I try constantly doing, right? And I'm lucky enough where I have encountered some really good builders, good guys in the industry that I feel, you know, well, I hold them at the upper echelon and I look at them as mentors, right? Yeah. And they're always a phone call away. And one builder, for example, he was a godsend last year, especially, right? Because when I restarted the business, you know, started from scratch, I needed work. So he asked me to run a job for him. We did downtown Toronto. It was a beautiful office, really great job, and really proud of it. It wasn't my job. It wasn't through my company, but I was a supervisor.
You were part of it.
Yeah. Right? So, yeah, it was, you know, to have somebody like that in your corner that could kind of help you out. Or if I have a project and I need, I don't know, a heavy gauge steel frame or whatever, I could always call them up and kind of lean on them for trades or whatnot, right?
That's the one thing I do like about construction, where we're seriously heavy problem solvers.
Yeah, all the time.
Like, most people will look at it, if you're not in construction, most people look at it and they'll spend weeks and weeks scratching their head trying to figure out
how
to do this versus a good contractor, a good tradespeople, the crew and everybody is like, here's a solution, here's another solution.
Exactly.
And then you just keep on figuring out the best way to move forward.
Yeah, and I guess it's... I guess for lack of a better term, it's what I try to focus on in terms of what I provide to the client. Because I don't know how many times have you hired a guy and then he's looking and it's like, oh, it's fucked. You can't do it.
Yeah, that happens. This is just, that's what I want to work with.
Exactly. What I hire you for? You know, what am I paying you? You know, and I think that's another reason why a lot of these builders, these guys that my mentors, I guess, they would call me in to fix a lot of other people's mistakes, which I realized that at one point, I was like, geez, that seems to be my niche. You know, that's what I'm getting called
because
in
that's
for.
The bulk of the work that's out there.
Yeah, pretty much. The
guys came in, they didn't really care, and they just did it good enough. They just did good enough.
Yeah, which, hey, I'm honored. I'm flattered that they'll give me a call, but sometimes when I was like, can you give me, you know, something easier than this instead of having to put
challenges?
This Jenga? Yeah, exactly, you know, instead of figuring out a Rubik's Cube, but either way, I'm grateful for the work.
You regardless. Like working in the core? You like working in Toronto?
I don't know, man. It's
none of the frustration bugs you,
like, downtown Toronto. Yeah. The traffic getting back. It's a 2 hour. It's like what it's, I have to travel maybe 10 kilometers at most, if that, and it's taken me almost 2 hours to get home one time in the middle of rush hour.
Yeah.
You know what? I don't know. Maybe it was cause it was a change. It was something new. It's been a long time since I worked down there, down in the downtown core. So.
But that's where a lot of the, I guess, commercial. No, there's a lot of stuff that's going outside of the core, right? But
also,
it's funny how a lot of the surrounding cities are just getting as congested as downtown core now.
Yes, yeah.
Like, sometimes I'm dumbfounded at how you look at GPS or you get on Waze or whatever, and you're like looking at it going, oh, look at that. It's like 4.7 kilometers away.
Yeah.
34 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know.
I can run faster and get it there.
I was just going to say, yeah, I can. I have the time to prove it. But yeah, you know.
But I don't get how that's just poor civil planning, right?
Yeah, for sure. Civil planning, urban planning. I don't know about the smart lights. Have they come in to play? Because they were talking about smart traffic. That's what I've been.
What's a smart light supposed to do?
When I was in my first program in college, they were talking to us about that, about urban planning with the city and all that stuff. And they were saying how they're introducing these smart traffic lights. So if there's let's say an ambulance racing down Yonge Street, it's going to change all the lights to green. But
they do that with fire trucks.
They do that with the fire trucks.
Yeah, they have the strobe on the center.
Oh, okay.
Because a fire truck can't stop or maneuver.
As well, yeah.
As well. So then when it's approaching, that strobe reads. There's a light on the bumper of the fire truck. So then it reads it and it'll keep it green so then it can keep on going, right? So it changes the pattern of the signal. So I know that they do it for fire trucks, but it's because of the size of the vehicle. That's what it is.
Got it. Okay. So then that being said, they were supposed to apply that technology with traffic volumes and whatnot, but I don't know.
How would that work?
I don't know. Like, it's like, think of smart elevators in condos where you've never heard of that?
No.
So it's AI, I guess. And I only heard about this, like, I don't know, 8 years ago, where there's obviously it could predict through day-to-day life patterns.
Or daily everybody patterns. That's living on each floor.
Exactly. So maybe, I don't know, floor 10, everybody vacates the building for the workday. So the elevators are going to hover around floor 10 in the morning, let's say, you know? So it's, I don't know how effective that is. Well, clearly, if we do have smart lights, clearly not as effective.
If they're out there, I don't think they're working, but if they are working, I would make the suggestion that you should include facial recognition. And if anybody's driving a Toyota or a Honda, move them over to the curb lane. Yeah, exactly. That's how I would do the smart lane.
Vehicular recognition. Yeah, no kidding.
Would that become vehicle racial profiling at that point? I don't know. And then all of a sudden it becomes racist and you're like going, yeah, but the traffic's moving now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
I'm always stunned by whenever I see people who don't know how to drive and they're very, when I see heads move really fast.
Yeah.
In the cockpit, so to speak.
Doing a shoulder check.
You're making me nervous, right? And then they just get on, they merge on the highway, and they go right to the passing lane.
Yeah.
Maybe you don't belong there. Like, maybe you should work all your way time, up there, man. Right?
All the time. Even last week, we had that snowstorm. In the evening, I was cruising along the 407. In the far left lane, I think it was a Honda Accord.
Toyota Honda.
Or a Civic. Either or. Six of one, half of the same thing. And hazards on, doing, I don't know, 60. Everybody's flowing at a nice 80. You could do 100. Yeah, it was snow covered, but everybody's flowing. And this guy, whoever there was, far left lane, hazards on. And it wasn't like there was a lot of traffic, but they had to venture all the way over to the left. Anyways, whatever. But yeah.
I don't get the hazards thing.
Neither do I.
I don't get it, man. I've never put the hazards on because the traffic going, like, all of a sudden, that's just called driving. You pay attention to your surroundings, right?
Exactly.
You pay attention to the vehicle ahead of you.
That's right.
There's lots of driving lessons that are not being taught to today's generation.
Very much so. Very much so.
Build the future you dream of with Generation Construction. Your home is where life happens, where your style shines, and where your future begins. Whether it's your first home, a space for growing family, or a place all your own, you need a builder who understands your vision and brings it to life. At Generation Construction, they ensure your home is everything you've imagined. Greg, the visionary behind Generation Construction, knows that today's homeowners, they want more than just walls. They want a space that reflects who they are. At Generation Construction, they don't just build houses, they craft homes that are uniquely yours. With a reputation for excellence, trust, and a commitment to working with the best, Generation Construction offers a seamless, stress-free experience that ensures your home stands strong for years to come. Contact Generation Construction today at 705-961-5562 in the Muskoka area and 647-381-0361 in the Greater Toronto area, or visit them at www.generationconstructionltd.com. For inquiries, email Greg at greg@generationconstructionltd.com. Let's build your dream project together. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life.
Yeah.
So, okay, well, that's the government doesn't really do all that. It makes a lot of sense. But I think the problem is that you got a city that's not really planned right.
No. So that's another thing. Okay. In terms of traffic lights and whatnot. But I remember another big discussion when I was in my first program in college. Now, I went from 2011 to 2014, right? So we're talking 10 years ago now, just over. They were saying about how the city of Toronto, and I may be wrong, but this was the discussion in class, how our infrastructure, we're talking sewage lines, that type of, the stuff that's nobody pays attention to, was way too big for the city at the time that it was built, right? So the city caught up. That's why the city was able to rapidly develop or build or grow to the size that it did. And we started catching up to it in 2010. Okay. So let's say the sewage lines were, you know, we could have gotten away with a 6 foot diameter sewage line, let's say, but instead they put a 15 foot diameter sewage line, just for sake of the argument.
For future or whatever.
For the future, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
They over-engineered our infrastructure, right?
Good, smart.
Absolutely. But as the city grew, you know, the new young urban planners, it's not sexy. It's who sees it underground? They're more focused on putting condos up and making that look good instead of worrying about the condos, everybody flushing the toilets at the same time. So that's why we started getting all those floods in Toronto, if you recall.
Yeah, I remember that. Coming out of the Union Station and stuff.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly, right? So that was a discussion. I remember my professor saying that's part of the reason, part of the problem, right?
There's a lot of problems with this city.
For sure. I'm not saying that's the one. And I'm not even saying it could be one of them, right? But
I know, but their solution is to like not allow anybody to run their water into the system.
Yeah, yeah,
because
yeah.
there's problems there. And I'm like, why don't we just pay attention to countries that are actually perfected this?
Yeah, exactly.
There's other cities that are far closer to water sources that have probably a lot more precipitation than we do.
I agree, yeah.
And they don't get the flooding that we do.
Why reinvent the wheel, right? But, you know, the wheel could be sitting right there and they'll refuse to even look at it or acknowledge it.
They still, like, right now, obviously there's a provincial election about to happen and it's because he wants to keep his job, just leave it at that, right? Yeah. And the problem is that you start seeing all these signs up and I'm like, you guys really don't do anything. Like, you don't.
Exactly.
That's where I get a little frustrated, is where your tax dollars are going to things that are supposed to be happening, but they're not happening.
Yeah, very much so. Well, I've always even said the city of Toronto, just the building department alone, you could eliminate 50% of the jobs. I would even go as far as saying maybe even 75%.
Probably.
And it's going to continue operating the same way. You wouldn't notice a difference because only 25% to 50% of the people in there actually do anything, in my
opinion.
Why
are we not paying attention to the rules of the past? Like, why not look, listen, like, I mean, why not look on how the biggest buildings were starting to build and get up there, right? And all of a sudden, like, what worked then? Why are we trying to implement new ideas that are not working today, right? Yeah,
that's a good point. And especially since we have all this technology nowadays with the software that you could see, clash detections and all that stuff, but we're still just as inefficient, it seems, than we ever were. Where before, they would have these engineering marvels and it was all pen and paper and things seem to get done.
My biggest gripe with the downtown core is the archaic streetcar.
Right. Okay.
It's like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, yeah. I mean, trams work in Europe because they're designed on roadways that are primarily, that's their source.
Right.
So you can't, a tram, a streetcar, doesn't work in a regular urban setting where you've got blocks every 500 feet.
Right.
Because, and then plus being on the left side, you're preventing traffic from moving otherwise, right?
Exactly.
So it doesn't work that way. Yeah. And all the trams that are in Europe, they have their own pedestrian on-off section.
Right.
They don't stop the traffic.
That's right.
So it's like, it makes no sense to me. And then you have the conversation that these should all be subways. And then they go, well, do you realize what the cost of the subway is? Well, do you realize the Eglinton LRT hasn't been opened up yet?
Yeah, exactly.
So it's just like, obviously there's poor planning going on. How about we just eliminate the people that are creating poor planning and start bringing in people that are going to create positive planning?
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, I bring all this up. And I bring it up because we should be building more in the core. Right? Like, we're building a lot of condos in the core.
Very much so, yeah.
Which is just making things a lot more congested. And I get it that a lot of the people that are down there are like, well, I'm not going to buy a car then. I don't need a car. I'll just Uber it to hell or I'll zip card it. I'll do all this stuff. But all that's creating congestion. So you're still not moving the roadway.
Exactly, yeah.
Like, the last time I was at a trade show and I was leaving the Metro Convention Center, it took me an hour and a bit just to get from that parking lot to the on-ramp onto the Gardiner.
Right,
who's not familiar with Toronto, that's literally like two blocks.
And it's painstakingly slow. It's brutal. It's torturous some days.
So like, that needs to be fixed,
or
right?
Or Spadina. Just going south.
Spadina exactly. on-ramp, right?
Exactly.
It's just brutal, right? And then everyone's coming from the west or sneaking in and they try to do the smart traffic.
Exactly.
And everything. But they're planning the buildings too fast and not realizing that the roadways are not working well.
Yeah, exactly. Well, even some of the condos are right up against the Gardiner. So now we've eliminated the possibility of ever having an expansion on the Gardiner. Now, whether that would have been feasible or not, who knows?
Easy. I keep saying you dig.
Yeah, go under. Yeah. I don't think that's a bad idea.
Tunneling is not new technology.
No, exactly.
And a lot of other countries are doing it.
In Europe, they do it all over the place, and it's sustainable. You know, it's
gives a lot of jobs, all kinds of stuff. And
exactly.
I bring that up because we need to get the workforce in the core, because not everybody's going to be riding a bicycle bringing their table saw to the job site, right?
Exactly. And that's another thing, is this whole 15-minute city and this and that. Everybody's wondering, because I drive a truck. Everybody's like, oh, you need to drive that big of a truck. Yeah, I tow. I need it. Oh, you drive downtown with that? Yeah, no shit. If I have work down there, I have to.
Right? What are they driving, a smart car?
Exactly. A little shit box.
Okay, then fine. Great. Are you in construction? No, you're in an office? Well, then that's the extent of your vehicle.
Exactly.
Why don't you just walk around with two doors on your back, if that's the
exactly.
case, right? Like, the vehicle is serving a purpose, right? That's why.
Yeah.
And a lot of contractors, in all fairness, they get a double cab or whatever it is, right? And the extended box, because they also use it as a family vehicle, too.
I use it. It's my daily driver as well.
Exactly.
Right? I need both. I can't do one without the other.
You got to drop kids off or pick up people. So you still need to move people, but you still need to move material.
Exactly.
So the truck has purpose, right?
Very much so. Very much so, right? So it is what it is, right? If the wheels ain't turning, you ain't earning, right? And you can't. And it, honestly, I had an argument with this. I remember this was when I was in my first program, college. It was at a friend's house, a family friend there. I grew up with trucks. In my family, we always had trucks.
Suburban. What is it? Four GMs?
My dad was more GM. He was Suburbans.
Okay. And you were?
I'm Ram.
You're a Ram.
Ram. My uncle was Dodge. Well, Dodge Ram, you know, and then since 2009.
Anybody Ford?
My mother. Yeah, she had an F-150. I got my driver's license driving her F-150.
Okay.
07.
So one of each, basically.
Pretty much, yeah. Got to sample them all, and I chose settled with the Ram. But
and everyone thinks theirs is the best.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, once they get into mine, though, they realize who the king is, right? But that's another story for another day. But where was I going with this?
Driving trucks.
Oh, that's right. So it was my buddy's family friend, whatever. He was saying how, you know, we drive such big vehicles. And he's like, oh, they're so inefficient. This and that. I go, okay, what do you drive? He was driving a Volkswagen, not the Jetta, but it was the new one. Like a Passat. I think it was a Passat.
Okay.
It just came out then. He's telling me how much more fuel efficient it is. Okay, no problem. How much shit can you put in that car versus my truck? And then how many trips are you going to have to make with that car to do the same work as I do in one trip with my truck? Now you tell me what's more efficient. Yeah, granted, if we're sitting there idling, yeah, maybe yours is going to burn a little less fuel, but in the grand scheme of things.
When he's at IKEA and he's ordering something that's oversized and exactly. Can't fit even with the seats down and the tailgate open still.
Exactly.
And he calls you up. He goes, can you just get... No. It's a gas-guzzling vehicle, dude. I can't do that.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's only good for construction material, not IKEA assembly.
Exactly.
Get them to assemble it or get them to deliver it, right?
Yeah.
And then what do they deliver it in? A big truck.
Exactly. Yeah. So
everyone is preaching and then they still do what they do. And I'm exactly. Like, oh, come on. You want to save the planet? Then don't do any of this shit.
Exactly.
Find a little spot in the woods and go there.
Yeah. And as far as from what I've heard, we've got more green on this planet than we ever have. Right. I might be wrong, but it seems pretty. I've seen photos of Toronto from back in the day. It doesn't seem as green as what it does now.
That's true.
You know, true. Okay. Riverdale Park, for example. I think it was in the 60s or the 70s, they started planting, native plant life there.
For that area.
At the bottom of the hill there. Now it's a heavily wooded area, but I saw a photo of it. It was just grass. They eradicated all that stuff back in the day, right? So what's better for the environment?
Well, remember when Tori had that plan to throw on the park over the railway downtown right there at Spadina, right where the... he was going to build a whole park on top of it.
The railway.
Yeah. So you know where all the trains come in to Union Station?
Yes.
There's Steam Whistle is, yes, right? Yes, around there. So it was just an ISO when you kind of crossing over the bridge.
Right,
it's
right.
It's just tracks, right? And
right.
I get it. And then his plan was to add more green to the downtown area. And then he was proposing to put a whole green space there. And I was like, that's a brilliant idea. I'm game with that.
Well, they did that in New York City.
They
got rid of it.
I know. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
You look to other cities that have done it, right?
Yeah.
And then you do it here. You don't argue, like, it's like the island, right? Like, everyone's living on the island.
Oh, John Island.
Yeah, they just object to everything. They were objecting for the Billy Bishop Airport and the planes going
right,
on there.
Right,
and
right,
I'm
right.
Like, listen, it's called technology. You're going to have to accept that. I don't care if you were there.
Yeah.
You're going to have to accept that there's planes going on. There's a lot more boats going on there.
That's right. That's right, yeah.
So.
I remember with the island, a little off topic, but Bombardier developed a jet airplane, wasn't like a passenger, commercial aircraft that was designed to be significantly quieter just so they could land in certain airports. Like,
they're still fighting that battle.
They are, yeah, right? I'm sure they are.
I think it's inevitable that you're going to start seeing jet planes going on to Bishop because it's convenient.
I think it's cool that we have an airport right downtown.
Yeah.
Me personally.
Yeah.
Right?
I think so. I want their path to go further.
They're
going pretty far these days anyway.
I don't know how far they go.
Florida, I thought they were going.
Oh, right on. Yeah, even better.
I think they're going down there now.
Nice.
I don't know. I haven't been on there. I was only on there a couple of times, but.
Porter, I've only taken it to Chicago.
Yeah.
And that's it. But yeah.
But it's like, listen, just accept it, man. Like, if it was up to me, I'd be having helicopter pads and just flying all this like that. We don't have that in, like, I don't see that
going
on.
You can't fly a helicopter in the downtown core. So when I was working at that company, it was a demolition, asbestos abatement, and soil remediation company under one umbrella. And then the other one was a construction company.
Okay.
So I did my co-op, and then I got hired on as a senior project manager with a construction side, but I did work for both sides, right?
Yeah.
And I went down to one of the bank towers. I can't remember which one. But anyways, nonetheless, there were these massive HVAC units on the roof.
Yep.
And we had to get rid of them. They were huge. They were the size of this room, essentially.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and I was the only guy on the site. You know how everybody does a site walkthrough, you know, you're competing on with different companies, whatever. And they're all talking, we couldn't get a crane, you know, couldn't shut down the street. I'm like, can we just get a helicopter? You know, because the CN Tower was right there. And the, you know, the sky crane, put that up there. Why don't we just do that?
And they wouldn't allow it?
And apparently, I don't know what year, but Toronto passed a law, I guess, where you can't have any helicopters doing that type of work in the downtown core, which kind of makes sense because if you need to cut away, if you need to drop the load, or if the helicopter goes down, there could be a potential for a lot of casualties.
But it's ironic because they needed a helicopter to finish the CN Tower.
Yeah, but it was
several trips, right?
I don't know how many trips. I know for sure the last one, right, putting the antenna up.
Yeah, which, Olga, the Russian thing. Yes,
Olga, that's right.
Yeah.
The Sikorsky sky
so that's,
crane.
That's interesting. So they just passed a law that no helicopters.
Yes, yeah, for that type of stuff, which, I don't know, it's counterproductive, you know. I don't know what to tell you. It's just one of those, so many things are shut down. Yeah, just
like come up with a plan. So wherever the building is, I guess, find out whichever roadway it is, block off that roadway.
Have a flight path.
And take the flight path along that street. So if something does have to fall, or if it does fall.
Exactly.
It lands there, right?
Exactly, yeah.
You would just think that makes sense, right?
Yeah, and that's the problem, though. Common sense isn't so common anymore. You know, so there's, you know, like this is why we can't have nice things, as I say, right?
I like seeing construction in the core. I like seeing.
Me too, yeah.
Like, it's just funny. I saw recently a couple of movies that were set in New York that were in 19, one was 95 and one was 99. And just that Central Park perimeter from then to now.
Oh, yeah.
It's insane what it looks like, right? It's a huge difference. But then if you look at Toronto, all you see is condo towers, and they're just not the most attractive looking towers to begin with.
Yeah.
When there's opportunity there to build some really interesting commercial building towers. But
for sure, yeah.
The business is unfortunately being pushed out of this country. That's the problem.
That's exactly it, right? And then, you know, okay, then what with, because some of the condo towers were just left vacant too, or the units, right, being purchased by foreign investors or foreign buyers.
A lot of that. That's a whole other story, right?
That's an entire whole other, I had to do a capstone on some of the contributing factors of the real estate boom.
Did laundering money come up during that?
Oh, well, definitely the foreign investors. Yeah, well, that like the real estate market was pretty much the largest money laundering operation ever. You know what I'm saying? But everybody's kind of, ooh, dumped to it, right? But we don't know.
I think it's happening in every city, especially it's happening in Toronto. Oh,
very much so, yeah.
Meet Felipe, the visionary behind Versa Homes, a name synonymous with excellence in construction across British Columbia. Felipe's passion for high-end craftsmanship, sparked by his mentor Dan Zecklin, drives him to deliver exceptional results in every project. At Versa Homes, every detail matters, and Felipe's unwavering commitment to precision ensures that each project meets the highest standards. Client satisfaction is more than just a goal, it's at the heart of everything Felipe does. He's dedicated to making the construction process smooth and stress-free, keeping projects on time, within budget, and meticulously organized. If you're looking for a builder in British Columbia who values quality and client care as much as you do, look no further. Discover what sets Versa Homes apart. Reach them at www.versahomes.com or call them today at 778-65-BUILD, B-U-I-L-D, or connect with them on social media under @VersaHomes. Versa Homes, where your vision meets their commitment to excellence. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life.
There's no excuse.
So what eventually do you want to get? You want to get into like, you'll develop a high rise?
I'd love to, yeah. And whatever makes sense, right? I definitely want to get into some sort
of
development.
A lot of pressure, no?
It is, but I'm good with that. I'm, you know.
A lot of handshaking, a lot of approvals, zoning, bylaws.
Yeah, for sure.
Greasing the wheels.
Yeah, exactly. That's a whole other...
Owning streets, upsetting neighbors.
Yeah.
Upsetting neighboring buildings because everyone's still got ego and they're like, no, you're not making my building taller than my building.
Right.
We've heard
right.
all those stories in other bigger cities where they just fight each other.
Yeah, for the air rights.
Yeah, all that stuff, yeah, right? Yeah. So it's just like, that seems just like a lot of pressure, man.
Yeah, but it's, I don't know, maybe it's either I'm too stupid or too stubborn to give up. It's what I set out to do. And, you know, until I get there, I'm not going to be satisfied. I don't know.
It would be pretty impressive. Like when you do pull it off and you're standing there and you're on the roadway and you're like,
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
I built that. You built what? I built that.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
That's definitely the ultimate visualization that I have in my head, or fantasy, or whatever you want to call it, is having my company logo just kind of dangling off the side of the building as it's being built, you know, and then when it's complete, it's like, yeah, you know,
it is. That'll be pretty cool than building a low rise residential dwelling. And then,
for sure.
Yeah, you have your sign there, but it's not the same. It's like it's completely different, yeah. Right?
And just to reach that echelon too, right? I'd love to build the empire, as I always say, right? You know,
it's funny. Lately, I've been getting a lot of union guys reaching out to me to come on the show, and the messages always start with, "I got a lot to share. I got a lot to talk about," right? And I don't know that much of that world, but I just know that the tradespeople that work in that high-rise union-specific world, they are a slightly different breed of contractor compared to low rise, right?
Very much so, for sure. And can I give you differences? Not really. I couldn't.
You haven't been pinpointed. Enough. They're just,
yeah.
Maybe if they're all lined up and I saw them on a job site doing the task at hand, I could probably point out the differences, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But there are some differences there. And I just like, I'm always fascinated by who chooses to go into high rise.
Right.
And then who chooses to go into low rise, or even leaving one for the other.
Right. Exactly. Right? Yeah.
It's an interesting perspective. That's how I look at it. Because I think when mainstream culture looks at construction, they always kind of point the finger at high rise construction workers.
Very much
people.
So. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, there's a lot of them that are in low rise.
Yeah,
right?
The guy with the lunchbox and the hard hat, taking the subway to work kind of thing.
That kind of thing, right? Yeah. And then you're basically a bunch of minions, right? Working on a job site,
exactly.
Getting the job done, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like there was like lots of guys were talking about, you know, he's Bathtub Mike. You know, like that's all he does every single day. He just installs a bathtub.
It's funny because I have a bathtub Louie on my phone and that's what he does. And he came from high rise.
They like it. They love it. Like, yeah, yeah. I couldn't do that. Like, no. I couldn't do the same task every single day, every single week. I'd go ballistic.
That's
right?
Why I didn't get into a specific trade. And again, it could be to a fault, could be right, could be wrong. But for me, I wanted to kind of have knowledge and everything. What's that saying? Like a jack of all trade, master of none. But a master of some is better than a master of one. None.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah,
that's the full saying. And that's what I wanted, to be able to kind of be multifaceted, right? But like right now, a trade is looking pretty sexy because you're a plumber, you're going in, you're doing that. And you got builders that always need something done. So it's just, you go in and cut dry. Whereas somebody trying to be a GC, it's a lot fewer and farther between to get the big jobs to start. You really got to, you know, cut your teeth, prove your worth, develop that clientele base, you know, and get going that way, right? But
there's a lot of chatter nowadays. How I still agree with it, how you can go the traditional school training, choose a career. You're going to rack up quite a bit of student debt. If you get into construction, you go to a trade program, you can get that done, or you can avoid that, or even go through the union. You know, union will pay for that program.
Right, okay.
It'll be a fraction of what you spent if you try to choose an accountant or whatever career you want to hygienist or whatever it is, right? And there's a lot of talk about all that money being spent, and then you get into trades, but people... I find it interesting on the U.S. side of things, they'll always talk about the future millionaires are all the tradespeople.
Right.
Specifically the top three, HVAC, electrical, and plumbing, right?
That's right, exactly.
And I disagree with it. I think the owners of those companies are the future millionaires.
Very much so.
The workforce is not the future millionaire unless you eventually become an owner of a company.
Right.
And now you're that much closer now to becoming a future millionaire, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Based off of swinging the hammer, turning the wrench, or whatever it is, right? Yep. But I don't want kids to go in there and thinking that it's beneath them and that there's no possibility. It's how we just started in the beginning, where it's like the work is there.
Exactly.
I've seen people start businesses recently and they're thriving.
Right, right.
So if the economy is so bad and things are going so wrong, why are they thriving?
Exactly. That's a good question, too.
They positioned themselves correctly. Yeah. They maybe have done a lot of homework on the side, and they've nurtured the relationships to get certain projects. And then they're feeding their crew, and now they're expanding their crew. Yeah. And that just all leads to becoming a very successful business, whatever the trade is. Right?
Exactly. Yeah.
But I don't think these kids are waiting that out.
No, not at all. Right?
To get to that point.
It's instant gratification versus delayed gratification. Right. And believe me, man, I'm victim of it too. Well, not a victim, but you know what I'm saying? Like I sometimes think like, the fuck am I doing wrong? Or
I should be a lot further.
Yeah, yeah. And then I talk to these guys that are in the industry, like, nah, man, you're a lot further than I was your age, which kind of pisses me off because like, are you lying to me? You're blowing smoke on my ass? Are you being honest, you know? Like, are you just trying to talk me off the ledge here, you know? But because again, you don't know what you don't know. or I know that I don't know certain many things, right?
Yeah, so, well, there's like, you got to figure out who you can trust with their opinion, because you'll have one group of people telling you shit to in the hopes that you'll fail.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, yeah, and you're going to get all that. Always. There's always a snake in the grass, for sure, right? But that's the beauty of not giving a shit.
Yeah, and then you got another group of people that will legitimately tell you, watch out for this, watch out for that.
Exactly.
But yeah. In all fairness, get all your information from a different bunch of sources.
Yeah.
But do your own homework, man.
Exactly, yeah.
That's
exactly.
Just a fact of it, right? Well, you can't rely just solely on what someone said. Oh, no. This is what I heard. This is how it should be done.
Exactly.
Yeah, but I heard something different.
Yeah, it's good to verify.
Do your own homework, man.
Yeah. Just like doing a job, right? Like, this guy says, or I don't know, this engineer says, yeah, you could do it, but the inspector says otherwise. Okay, you got to look into it. And can we do this? Where is it written? You know?
Engineers are funny, man.
Yeah, it's a good time.
Because I've had engineers in here before, and it's funny. What I've assessed from all of the conversations is that the battle to fight to do something more efficiently or better is far greater than just doing it the way they're asking you to do it. And I'm like, there's no reason in fighting this and trying to do it better and less expensive.
These are the engineers saying it? Right.
Because especially high rise, you start going high rise, like I'm against the raft slabs that they're building for all these structures to begin with, right?
The what slabs?
The raft slabs, all the base foundation before you even start the construction.
Got it, okay.
The amount of concrete, the amount of steel, the amount of everything where...
Oh, you said raft.
Right, yeah.
Got it, yes.
So all of a sudden they start talking about how you don't need that, man. There's buildings that are right next to that building that you're proposing that don't even have a fraction of that. Well, but today they're asking them to do
especially
that.
Especially downtown core. Anything. So, you know where the Chorus campus or George Brown campus is right down on Queens Quay?
Yeah.
If you step off the ledge into the water, 14 meters down is when you're going to hit bedrock. And then if you go, and then between that and Front Street, where the St. Lawrence Market is, it's all called loon shit.
Well, it was all fill.
It's all fill. Yeah. Exactly. Right. Because when the city was developing, they just kept throwing in.
City originally ended at King?
Right at the St. Lawrence Market.
Yeah.
The St. Lawrence Market was right on the water.
Yeah.
And then the way the bedrock or the natural progression, I guess, of the soil depth is at Bloor Street, it's at 40 meters bedrock. Right. So when you're building downtown Toronto, you don't need that big of a raft footing or slab.
But since every building now is asking for that, it's a waste of material, waste of time, waste of money.
Very much so. Yeah, exactly. Right. And then that's obviously passed on to the consumer.
And then the engineers won't fight it.
Right. Exactly.
Because it will take longer. You can't start your project sooner.
Oh, yeah. It's not just like condos, big multi-million dollar developments. It's also just a house renovation. I did a house renovation. True. It took me a year and 8 months just to get my permits.
What was the stumbling block?
So there was a porch. So that was one of the only houses on the street that did not have a porch. It was enclosed. And the original building line, the brick.
It's always the face of the brick.
Right.
The door.
Yeah. So that was demolished. So the living space was extended to the edge of the porch, let's say.
Illegally.
Allegedly. But this thing was done in the 50s. The house was purchased in 65.
It would have been grandfathered.
It should have been grandfathered in. But no, even when it was done unlawfully. Well, this is decades ago. You know, you weren't even alive. I was sure as hell wasn't alive. What do you want us to do? This house
was
is still
the foundation
standing.
Wall also moved forward?
As far as I'm concerned, yes. Yeah, because there was a crawl space underneath. And we were able to find, I think there was. I'm not sure. I can't remember.
That was just, I'm trying, like, there is the grandfathering going on.
For sure.
I've come across that where I've spoken to them and they're like, it doesn't matter that this used to be enclosed. You're now building something new. So now the property line is here. Your dwelling line is here. It's not here.
Right. Okay.
But I think then I had a conversation about, okay, was the foundation moved? And if now the foundation is part of the living space.
Right. Exactly.
And technically speaking, that porch line is your dwelling line, right?
Right. So anyways.
Both sides can argue both things. That's a problem.
Exactly. That's true. That's the unfortunate thing, right? But it should have been grandfathered in by...
So it took a year and a half to just...
A year and 8 months. So what happened was I was just trying to underpin the place.
2 years, man.
Yeah. And it was a full gut. Full on gut and then renovating the basement or underpinning the basement. And the city was not giving us the permits, especially to renovate the house because of that. We're not adjusting setbacks. It's not like we're putting an addition or anything. It's just interior renovation, period. And so then I said, okay, well, the underpinning has nothing to do with the house. Can we just get that? That's its own separate permit, essentially. So they finally gave me that. And then I said, okay, cancel the rest of the permits. We're just going to start with the underpinning.
We've done that before.
Yeah.
It speeds things up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then they refused to pass the underpinning permit because of the issue with the porch. And I had to go back and forth with them. And pretty much tell them, I've canceled it, you know, ended. And I don't want the money back. Keep the money. It was like however a couple hundred dollars.
Whatever you do
was,
it, yeah, you
yeah, paid to get this. I could care less. It's just the time. And then once that was done, I resubmitted. But they had four. My whole point I was trying to say, going back to the condos, we had four different evaluators on this one house. Four, right? And when I used to work with that other company, when I was doing my co-op, I had a lot of on-site experience. So they put me as a site super on a job at TTC.
Okay.
Right? And what I found there is they're very strict. We got, I don't know, five phases to the job. You cannot proceed to phase two until I, the TTC inspector, gives you approval, right? But then the other department of TTC will not pay you until you get approval. So, to get approval, you got to get a sign off from TTC engineer. But there's 10 assigned to that one project. So engineer number one is going to give it to, get engineer number seven to look at. Engineer number seven is going to give it to number three. Number three to number eight. And then they're back. Nobody wants to sign off and take responsibility.
That's exactly
so then,
it.
And then now the department that's keeping you on track is saying, oh, well, you've already violated your contract because you haven't proceeded to phase number two. Yeah, well, we can't proceed to phase number two because we haven't gotten the sign off from your engineers, your guys. Well, that's not our problem. That's your problem. You know, and it's all
that's
this bullshit.
Your problem.
I'll give an example to be succinct or to finalize it. They asked us to bid on a job to remove a handrail for the stairs from platform to grade to level to street level.
Okay.
And it was back and forth, you know, if you're going to do it, how are you going to do it? I don't know, use a socket wrench. If you're going to use a socket wrench, what are different options? Okay, well, we could use a socket wrench, a regular wrench, an adjustable wrench. Yeah, yeah. And then, okay, can you give us the type of socket wrench, how many revolutions it would be?
No.
How many guys would it take? And the job was only like a $15,000 job. It was $15,000 worth of paperwork going back and forth, back and forth. And we gave him a perfect manual on any idiot could remove a railing. And he's like, okay, thanks very much. We're going to take care of it ourselves. One of those things. That's what the guy that worked on it pretty much told me.
So they asked you for every detail associated with this.
Step-by-step manual.
And then they ended up doing it for themselves.
Yeah.
Educated them how to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So you got a lot of people that don't know what the hell they're doing in positions of authority. And then now somebody does know what they're doing. Then egos get involved. You know, then, and that's what I've noticed is 95% of construction is dealing with people. It has nothing to do.
I find when you deal with the building departments, if the person continuously repeats the question, they don't know fuck all about construction.
That's a good point. That's a very good point.
Because what do you do on a job site if someone's asking you a question?
I answer the question.
You answer the question, but then they have a follow-up question about it, and then you answer more detail.
Right, right, right. That's right, yes.
So you continuously expand the scope of your answer. Correct, so that's why when I find building officials, they just repeat the same fucking question in the email.
Yeah.
I'm like, you really want to type, you don't know shit about construction.
Yeah.
Because if you did know, you'd be asking me a different question.
A home built on trust, crafted with care. Your home is more than just a structure. It's where memories are made, where your family grows, and where you find comfort. That's why your renovation or building project deserves nothing less than the utmost care and quality. Because it's not just about creating a space, it's about creating a place where life happens. Tim, the heart and soul behind Ravine View Construction, understands that your home is personal, and whether you want to be involved in every detail or prefer to leave it in the hands of a trusted expert, he and his team are here to make your vision a reality. At Ravine View Construction, every project is handled with the passion it deserves, from the initial site assessment to the final touches that turn a house into a home. Tim's team doesn't just build, they protect what matters most. With a reputation built on trust, excellence, and a commitment to using only the best materials, Ravine View Construction ensures that your home isn't just beautiful, it's built to last. Tim and his team work alongside the finest tradespeople, guiding you through every step so you always feel confident and cared for. Let them help you create a space where you can enjoy peace of mind and cherish moments with those you love for years to come. Connect with Ravine View Construction today at 416-671-0170 or visit them at www.rvchomes.ca. For direct inquiries, email Tim at info@rvchomes.ca. Let them build not just a house, but a home filled with lasting memories. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life.
Yeah, I got a laughable, it's almost, you can't make this shit up. I renovated a house years ago, 11 years ago, and I was trying to get my permits. Thankfully, I had my professor from school. He helped me out doing the drawings and everything because I was just starting out. I didn't have an architect, so I asked him if he could do my drawings. Yeah. And they were hung up on, it was a wide flange beam in the basement.
Okay.
And the lady wasn't, or the evaluator, she wasn't passing my plan or my permit because she doesn't understand what a WB beam, W Bravo beam. And I was, you know, looking at the email, no, there's no, it's a W8, you know, no, it says here it's WB. And, you know, I'm thinking, I'm seeing shit. I'm zooming in. I asked for my professor, I printed up the drawings, like, no, man, it's W8. Because they want to see what's existing, right? And we went and measured again. It's like, it's a W. And I thought I was missing something, right? And don't go wrong. Like, if you say I'm wrong.
They didn't know. Whether it was a she or a man, it doesn't matter. They just didn't know.
They didn't know, period.
It's they didn't evaluated. Want to say that they didn't know.
So I had to email her and say, okay, between the numbers 1 to 9, what looks like the number capital B or the letter, the capital letter B? It's 8. I had to give her the answer. It's 8. Right. And then he got frustrated, obviously, and he called, I guess, the building department, and they rectified it. And I got my permit that afternoon.
But you never got a follow up email going, no. My apologies.
No,
I'm sorry.
Nothing.
But no, they never do that.
Just permit. No, no, no.
Maybe exactly. You don't belong in this department.
No kidding. You know, so it was like something simple as that.
Oh, that happens all the time, man.
Which is mind boggling because for me, I get irritated sometimes because I have fucking imposter syndrome. You know, like I know my shit. But then do I? I don't know. I'll double check. Let me double check. I might be wrong. Let me check again. But then you got these people that walk in, you know, acting like they're all hot shit and they don't know anything. Right? It's like,
you know who's a good person to have in your corner? And I encourage anybody at any level of construction to make friends with a person like this or even put them on retainer is a code compliant consultant, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I did.
Because I've had situations where I was lucky enough. I was fortunate enough. I had a situation with a junior inspector. And he was just a dick. That's all it was, right?
Yeah,
And I wasn't interested in being a dick back.
Exactly.
And it just like, when it got to the point where it's like, you're asking me the same stupid question over and over, dude, and I'm already answering you. I'm like, okay, I'd like to speak to your supervisor now. And then it gets to that point, supervisor gets involved, and then it starts all over again. Okay, bring me up to speed, Manny. And then I got to regurgitate the whole thing again, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And it just worked out that I was talking to somebody, and they're like, listen, go speak to Mike, who's a co-consultant, right? Mm. And I speak to him and I tell him exactly. And Mike answers the question right away, pulls up the code,
oh, nice.
Numbers to everything. And he goes, jot this down right now, man. He pulled this out. Send this email. He literally got me dictating the email that I was going to send to the supervisor. Within a day or two, it was approved and it was done.
Nice.
And okay. I was like, yeah, because, I mean, that's what they do because they come across this crap all the time, right?
Right
and this
right.
was regarding a window well.
Oh, wow. Okay.
There was a conflict of interest regarding the bottom portion of the window well to where the existing footing was.
Oh, okay.
The junior inspector was taking the measurement from the top of the footing to the bottom of the window well when the code is the bottom of the footing to
right.
the bottom of, and so we were clear.
Right.
But
right.
this dickhead was just, I'm right, you're wrong. And
yeah,
I'm like,
yeah.
You're wrong. Just accept the fact, right? And then yeah. I told the supervisor that. And I joked, I tongue-in-cheek, and I just said, I guess so-and-so is not going to respond back apologizing for his error, and he's caused all this delay and frustrated between
yeah, exactly.
me and my client, right?
Yeah.
It got approved right away. It was done. But that's, I mean, I one conversation with a code-compliant consultant
right.
who knows everything and is yeah. up to date on everything. It makes sense because you could either spend the time and effort and just fight. Or
yeah, exactly.
you pull out the information, go, screw you. This is what it is, right?
Yeah,
and now
yeah.
we're building it correctly
yeah.
and we're not doing anything wrong here.
Exactly.
You need to educate yourself on your side. I find contractors on site are more educated than building people in the department.
Very much so, 100%. And like for me,
you can challenge me on that, but I find that contractors do the homework.
Oh yeah, very much so. And I'm lucky to have gone to school and had the programs and professors that I had because we had to learn a lot of building code.
Yeah.
One of my professors was involved in writing the building code and he taught us how to look for information. That was a good thing with the two programs that I did. I did it both at George Brown College. One was building renovation technology. So it was the advanced diploma. It was a three-year program. The first 2 years was all in the shop, essentially. A majority of it was in the shop class. So we're working with real materials. And the last year was more like construction law, the accounting side and everything. And then I went back to school. I felt like I was going to kind of hit a glass ceiling with the knowledge that I had, you know, because I wanted to get into bigger projects. So then I went back for the, it was called the Honors Bachelor of Technology Construction Management Program. So with those programs, what I liked about them was they didn't force you to memorize things. They wanted you to learn how to find information, which was great because the practice of it is like in that case, right? With a say you didn't have your co-consultant there. Well, you have the resources now to find it in the building code.
You can open up the
building
type. You can find it.
You know, part nine, obviously residential, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And it's cool because it's definitely a language. Obviously it's English, but you learn the flow, just like law. I always was very fascinated with law. And you kind of learn the flow of the legal jargon and, you know, you could kind of figure it out. So I always found building code fun, I guess, to read it. And I could understand it, right? So that alone, the contractors doing their work. Yeah. But then you get the ego involved. So there was, I remember same site on the TTC there when I was doing my co-op. And okay, now we're talking, it's almost... Okay, it's been 8 years, so I think I'm clear. But I was certain things.
Happened? Okay,
we had to get a hot work permit, right, for certain work, and we were in a mud pit.
Okay,
if I lit a 20-liter jerry can on fire, we're not catching anything on fire in our vicinity. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I get it, but the TTC also had co-op students, right, and part of their compliance thing. And this guy was decked to shit, right? He had the yellow tinted glasses.
He was gonna go visit the sun.
Gloves. Yeah, I had the gloves on, the keys hanging on the chain, you know what I'm saying, flopping around. Like, this guy was eagle eye. He'll catch everything, right? Ego. And you could spot it a mile away, right? So I figured, fuck this guy. I'm gonna work to his insecurities because he doesn't want to look stupid. And I need to get shit done. So, you know, I started immediately because I didn't have a hot work permit. So I just, because you were supposed to hang it on the temporary fencing just outside of where we're working. I can't remember what the situation was, but it was like a, you know, we could get shut down for this kind of thing.
Of course, and they stopped by.
Yeah. So the first day I was introduced to him by his superior, right? Everything was all good. I had my, I guess, boss, the guy that was overlooking me, right? From the office, he dropped me off kind of thing, just show me around. So I started talking like, oh man, you're in school too, whatever. So I got that sense that he was trying to establish from the beginning his authority.
It's like, how important are you?
What's that?
How important are you?
Exactly.
Right?
Right.
And that's how a dictator will speak to you.
Yeah. So I get it. What I decided is I figured, you know what, screw this. With this guy, I knew how I could get him away because he would nab everybody. He wouldn't have a guy, somebody upstairs complaining that the worker wasn't wearing safety glasses, but it was just clear safety glasses. So he got written up and then it kind of went away because they realized he was. Anyways. So with this guy coming, I'm thinking, oh shit, I was doing something wrong according to their policy, but I just figured, fuck it. Like I said, I got to get this shit done and screw this guy. So what I did is started talking to him about construction, getting technical, right? I know my strengths. I know he doesn't know what the hell I'm talking about. And then I started talking about, you know, it's an open cut excavation, things like that. Something that you could kind of follow on. But then I just really wanted to see, you know, the bullshit baffles brains kind of thing. I started talking about lintels and framing, but he thought I was still referring to. So that's how I knew this guy doesn't know shit. And then I would ask him questions.
Did he contribute to that part?
I would start asking him questions like, but you wouldn't do that, would you? And he didn't know what to say. He was very uncomfortable with it because he doesn't want to be discovered.
Of course.
So then what do? He started avoiding me. Good. Stay the fuck over there. I'm going to do my work here. And it was awesome because we got so much shit done. So when my boss would call me, I was like, well, did you get this? Don't worry. I took care of it. You know, because he was that guy that everyone was worried about. And he was just a summer student, but he, you know, he really wanted to impress people. So that's where sometimes I realize with the city, with anybody, it's dealing with people. You got to figure them out. And that's how you get the most out of them.
But that's construction. And we're supposed to work together.
Exactly.
And it takes together to make it work.
Well, look at it. We're on the same team. He's working with the TTC. I'm building something for the TTC. Don't you want me to just do my job and be done with this?
Some of the best engineers I've ever worked with or I've even seen working on a job site are the ones that are in the pit.
Exactly.
They're right next to 100%. The contractors with the drawings in hand.
Exactly.
Having an open conversation, yeah. looking for ideas from the crew and making their own suggestions, you know, from their experience. Yeah. That's construction.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't have this hierarchy ego bullshit coming in like you're top dog on the mountain.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's a new mountain every single time you're building, man.
And even the guy pushing the broom, you're going to get the most productivity of him when the guy in the suit and tie comes down, just, hey, how's it going? How's everything going? How's everybody been treating you? Screw how's everybody been treating you. Like, how is the job going for you? Something simple as that, man, you'll get the most productivity. That's the way what I noticed with my employees. I wouldn't just give them cash bonuses. Like, oh, this guy's into, I don't know, fucking camping. Get him a airless or inflatable mattress. So like little things, you know? I've bought my guys boots. Like, I'm not a big company, right? So I've bought them boots, hard hats. Well, obviously the hard hats, but even pants. Like, for me, I hate the ratty-tatty look. I want everybody looking uniform, everybody looking clean, you know? Yes, we're going to get dirty, but don't show up in your friggin' Roots track pants.
Drawstring.
Exactly. No. You're gonna go to Mark's or Work Authority or wherever the hell you go. You're going to get work pants.
You're going to get work pants. You know? You're going to look like a worker.
Yeah, you're not going to wear your old running shoes. We can't be on the job site anyways.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're going to, okay, you can't afford them. I get it. Don't worry. I'll cover it. I'll get you your boots. I'll get you your pants, whatever. Yeah, because, you know. I get it.
I like the personalization of the gifts instead of just like, here's a gift card or here's some money.
Yeah.
Because it just shows that the boss is listening to my team.
And that's all it is.
That's all it is. Right? Simple as that.
And that's another thing is that's why I want to do every shit job under the sun. I wanted to do the worst of the worst because I knew I never wanted to set out to just swing the hammer the rest of my life. I wanted to have a big company, be in developments, whatever. But I also wanted to know exactly what that guy in the trench went through.
Yeah, of course.
And I wanted to do worse, a lot worse, to know, okay, don't worry. I've done a lot worse than you. Not to throw in their face, but I get it. When you get that little espresso, when it's negative 30, oh my God, is it ever, you know what I'm saying? It is a morale boost.
It's a moment of calmness. I know, I get it, totally.
Very much so, yeah. You know, so this law office that I did last year downtown, I noticed the framers, right? We obviously it was light gauge and heavy gauge steel framing. And these guys were, pouty, you know, just not.
What time of year was it?
It was actually a year ago is when we started. So winter. February.
Okay.
Exactly. It was winter.
Yeah, but it was a calm winter last year.
It was. It was. But we had 13 different sets of drawings. Like, not just revisions, like 13 brand new sets of drawings. Yeah.
Wow.
We're going to drywall 50% of the ceiling. Now 90%. Now only 20. It was like, and, you know, the office is going to be from here to here now. Or, you know, it was, look, I get it. But, obviously I got frustrated, right? And I was telling him, listen, guys, if I came in with a demo crew tonight and demolished everything, and I told you in the morning, tomorrow morning, to build it just the way it was, guess what you're going to do? You're going to build it just the way it was. You're getting paid by the hour. Stop complaining, right? This is your job. Just fucking do it.
You came in to do this.
Exactly, right? Yeah. So, you know, and just getting them to put the hard hat on. Oh, my God. And then we had, I do think it was the building manager that was calling MOL on us. Because somebody kept calling because we're doing this, that.
They kept on showing?
They kept on showing up, yeah. It was a fun time when I answered the door one time without my hard hat. okay. I'm getting a ticket now. But anyways, that's another story. But
Did you get a talk or a ticket?
I got a ticket.
You got a ticket?
But he gave it to me as a worker, not a supervisor. So, okay, thank you.
It was a little better.
Yeah.
Softer.
Exactly.
But still, yeah.
Right? So, anyways.
Attention subcontractors and skilled trades. Are you looking for your next big opportunity? 2x2 Construction is expanding and is on the hunt to grow our top-tier network of professionals. Whether you're a carpenter, plumber, or roofer, etc., if you can deliver top-quality craftsmanship, offer competitive pricing, and your communication is where we shine, we want to hear from you. At 2x2 Construction, we value strong partnerships. From multiplexes to garden suites, we're all about building better together, and we want you to be a part of it. Reach out today at info@2x2construction.ca or connect with us on Instagram at 2x2 Construction. Join the 2x2 Construction team where great work meets great people. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life.
So getting these guys to wear their hard hats, right? And then it's the little jabs, the little passive aggressions, like, fuck this, I'm not wearing it, you know? And like, you gotta ask the same guy. And I got to the point, it's like, buddy, you put it on, you get the fuck off the site. You know, I'm not asking options, you, man. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
You know?
Because you get a ticket and I get a ticket.
Exactly.
I don't want a ticket.
Exactly. Right. So, you got to be creative, right? You got to figure things out. And so I was watching these guys and I noticed that a lot of them, there were four guys on the site, two of them every morning would have these wraps. I can't remember.
Backrest.
Yeah. And another guy, he was on this baker scaffold, kind of taking the weight off of his legs, letting his pelvis and his legs dangle kind of thing. And I'm like, oh shit, I know exactly what's going on. These guys, their lower backs are so wrenched. And I had that issue where I was renovating a house and I was sistering footwear, exactly. I was sistering a joist and I blew out my back, right? And then, you know, okay, thankfully, I was dating a chiropractor at the time. Awesome, she fixed me right up. But I've had that where my boots degrade, right? And then it transfers up, right? So you got back pain all the time. You're wearing the tool belt, doesn't help. And I noticed a guy, and I just, hey man, I noticed you got back pain. He's like, yeah, man, it's fucking, you know, it sucks. This time I go, buddy, I had the same thing. And I explained my truth. I didn't inflate it. I didn't lie about it. It was exactly that. I'd be in the shower in tears almost sometimes. And at the time I was in my early 20s, 21, 22, 23. Yeah. What the fuck? I'm having back pain now.
How old were the boots?
They were over a year old. So now every 6 months, 6 to 8 months is when I change my boots, right? But I had to learn that the hard way. And I remember my dad always saying, invest in a good pair of shoes because you're always, you know, on your feet kind of thing. It's not wrong. But anyways, so I noticed that and I gave him my bit of the story because you got to be careful. You don't want to give them too much unsolicited advice. And at the end of the day, nobody gives a shit, right, about your story. But what I did is I gave him hope. So I actually called up my ex, who I still have a good relationship with. It's like, hey, what are certain chiropractic clinics I could send them to for this? She's like, yeah, here, you know, sends them over because they lived north, I think in Aurora, I can't remember. So I explained to them, guys, it's not chronic. It doesn't have to be like your hip flexors are tight. I gave them a few stretches that they could do on their own, but hit up a chiropractor for this, not just to crack your back. They'll, you know, do TCM, traditional Chinese medicine, like the acupuncture, but the shift. They finally, because the one guy was saying, what's the point of even living if I'm like this? He goes, I had to crawl. Yeah. He said he had to crawl to the door to answer the door for Christmas to see his daughter, right? Because he just couldn't move, right? But it gave him like a newfound hope, you know what I'm saying? So that alone, their productivity skyrocketed. Any change that came down the line, no, they get it. Because I realized that they were dealing with some chronic issue, right? It's the same thing with another employee that was having issues at home or a grandmother being sick or whatever it may be. You got to notice these things. Yeah. And just acknowledging it, I find, goes a long way, right? Just like these building inspectors, you got to sometimes acknowledge your ego. Yeah, man, it's all good. You know,
it makes more sense to go that path instead of the resistance path.
Exactly, right? Very much so.
Because you're never going to get what you're looking for.
Exactly.
You have to stay focused on what's the objective here. The objective here is to get past, to get the approval, to move forward.
Yeah.
Same thing with the workforce.
Yep.
I learned the foot thing way, way long ago. Yeah. Like I knew, I was talking to a doctor one time, and it was a sports doctor, and he was like, any back pain starts at the feet.
Yep.
It's the footwear.
Exactly.
And then I'll even go further. I tell guys, listen, you change your footwear every 6 months, but when you find the right boot that you like,
yeah, exactly,
buy two.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah,
alternate them.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. My dad told me that actually with dress shoes.
Right? Same thing, any footwear. Exactly. You want to get two, right? Because then you can alternate them so your feet don't get used to the one that you're constantly wearing.
Right. Exactly.
And you put a fresh, and I tell people just at lunchtime, switch them up.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
It's like starting a new day, right? So we all know what our feet feel like in the beginning, right?
Yeah. And we could fall into that trap because especially in construction, you're wearing steel toes all the time.
And they're not, I mean, they're much better today.
Yes.
Like I personally like wrist parts. Like they're Italian, and I like that they're light and they feel more like regular boots.
Okay.
And I also like the boa lace on them.
Oh,
right. Okay. So they just snap in like regular snow boots, right?
Yeah.
And I never like laces because laces can get caught up or whatever.
Yeah.
And I like them. They're comfortable.
Yeah. So I'm Timberland Pro because I have a very wide foot and finding footwear is always a difficult task for me. But I found the Timberland Pros were great. They lasted. Like I had Dakotas. I wasn't really fond of them, but that's my boot.
But it's hard to tell workers, get rid of these. It's been 6 months, I know. Right?
Yeah, exactly. And
I'm like, dude, it's like tires in your car.
Exactly.
Once the tread is gone, you're gone down to the markers.
And that's the thing, yeah. And it's funny because I'll get guys that have the same pair of boots for 3-4 years.
That makes no sense.
No, and they got so much tread, whereas my boots are 6 months old, and I got no tread. or they have so much tread. I have no tread on my boots, and they're only 6 months.
I know, but you can only imagine what the inside of that boot after 3-4 years is like. He's probably impressed it like,
oh, for sure. Right. 100%. 100%.
You can pour concrete in there and then peel it back and then go, here's your foot. It's perfect now, man.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Pretty much. Yeah, it's molded to their foot for sure.
I want to ask you.
Yeah.
Like, you know that talking about code and stuff, there's a lot of green bullshit coming down the pipe that they're forcing people to do, especially in the towers, right? And also, they're looking to do it in residential now. And how are you going to navigate that world, man? Because it's going to increase price, right? So it's not that you're going to eat these costs.
Right.
But you're going to be forced to have to do all this stuff, right? And now you got to pass that cost on to the homeowner, the client, right?
Yeah. Short answer, I don't know. Not yet. I'll figure it out. Tackle it when
you get it.
Exactly. Kind of thing, right?
I'm of the mind of challenging it, man. Like, I really... I'm 1,000% against heat recovery stacks in residential.
Yeah, that's a kind of a, yeah. Even my plumber was telling me, a good buddy of mine, I've known him since grade 6, really good plumber. But yeah, even him was saying, like, it doesn't make sense. And look, some of the green stuff makes sense or altering how we do. Can you let me know
which ones?
Yeah, okay. So I guess I call it green, call it whatnot. But again, learning this in school, and granted, school's not the end all be all, but it made sense, okay. Right? I did a lot of building science program or courses.
Which is fascinating. I love talking to building science.
It's actually pretty fascinating. Yeah. I hate it. It was a bane of my existence, the calculations and everything. But, you know, the science part of it was really, I like cool.
Talking to them.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, yes. Right? But, for example, we haven't altered. We've only now changed. After 100 years of constructing houses the same way, only now have we altered it. And what I mean about that is putting the control layers on the exterior of the structure. That makes sense to me.
How long was Europe doing that for?
Exactly. Right? But it makes sense to me, right? So, and that's just alone. You get to eliminate so much thermal bridging through the studs.
Yep.
Like, that's green to me. Hey, that's great. That's a great leap in the right direction. The other stuff, I don't know.
I agree with that. The wall, but I'm always been a fan of a thicker wall assembly. I've always been a fan of an insulated wall,
right
parallel to a mechanical wall. So you're running all your mechanicals, your electrical, your plumbing, your HVAC lines on one wall that's not breaking the thermal.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And now you're insulating the other wall as your thermal. And I'm like, that's the ideal wall system. That's what I learned from building science. I've been to enough building science conferences and talking to these guys, and I'm like, man, this thicker double wall stuff, this is like magic. This is amazing. Yeah. But they don't implement it in code. Now they're trying to do a version of it in code, right?
That's right. Yeah.
And the problem is that the version of it becomes challenging because now you're bringing in certain materials. And then one thing I learned from everybody that I've spoken to, doesn't matter how perfect this wall is designed on paper, if the worker don't assemble it correctly on the site, it fails.
Yeah, exactly. And they have to understand it.
And the problem is that they probably don't understand it.
Right.
And they're going to be fearful of questioning, okay, you want me to put what first and second? Like, what do I, and you want me to tape? No, not tape. You got to use a membrane now.
That's right.
And, and then you want me to carry this roller on my tool belt now? Yeah, I go, roller's part of your tool belt assembly now.
Right, right.
And they're like, what do I need the roller for, right? And it's just education at that point.
For sure. And that's why I feel a good set of drawings, good sectionals, you know.
It helps details.
The details, exactly. Yeah. You know, helps a lot.
That goes back to the engineer and architect. They're getting a little lazier on their drawing details.
Yeah, I got a funny story with that one. Not just the details, but like schedules. When I was in school,
what was missing?
Everything? I had to learn that they copy and paste a lot of these column schedules.
I've caught it on drawings before. I go, why is this one corner? I don't understand this detail in this corner. It doesn't belong to this house.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And then they would just say, oh, sorry, that was just.
Yeah, exactly. Or I was racking my brain. Where's a C9? Where's a column? C9. And I'm looking at the drawings over and over.
It's on another house.
Yeah, it was just a copy and paste schedule. I lost 2 hours of my life just looking for this thing.
They used to draw them by hand. They used to do it all one-offs. They used to do all that shit.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, we can make more money if you just do this, right? I recently had that happen with HVAC design.
Oh, yeah.
And the guy was literally cut and pasting, man. And I was like, dude, did you read any of the notes that were supplied to you beforehand on where we want to throw this manifold, where we want to put the zones because you've done everything against everything that was requested.
Yeah.
And he goes, what's the big deal of having one manifold? And I'm like, you're not asking the right questions here. And you should be answering my questions that are coming from the client. Exactly. So can we please address this? And then it got to the point where it was like 1,000 emails back and forth, and everybody was CC'd on this. And I was like, this is just pure entertainment, right?
Yeah.
And it got to the point we get on site and I see the workers, and I'm very respectful of workers. And I'm like, that was interesting last night. And he goes, yeah, I was going to wait for this morning and just have a conversation with you. I was like, okay, so what's the plan? We're going to do it the way you discussed it in the emails. Okay. And we're going to do it that way. I was like, thank you very much. Go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then they had to send off, this is what was done. And then he had to sign off on it
because
he was all about his ego. I'm not going to sign off if you guys do a loop longer than this and then this whole shit. And I go, dude, I know your loop lengths. I know everything about that shit. We get it. And the workers that are doing the work, they're very well aware of that shit.
Yeah. And usually the workers, like we said, they could tell you right off the bat by looking at it, whether it's going to work or whether it's not.
That's exactly what was going on. But we didn't need all this email correspondence bullshit.
Yeah, no kidding, right? And it's funny because at the risk of sounding ignorant, I feel construction is the one industry where it's almost like everything seems to be negotiable. And you do so much work seemingly for free. Like a lawyer, you call a lawyer, they're already clocking time, man. But the amount of free work that you do, like if I build like a lawyer, man, I wouldn't have to worry about anything. Just answering questions, right?
It's true, but you can't build like a lawyer, though.
Of course not. Of course not.
But designers can, engineers can, architects can.
I'm not arguing or complaining, but it's a very unique, let's say, construction.
We did it to ourselves.
Yeah, I guess so.
Because we're just that kind of group of people that we're just like, you ask us a question, we're looking for the answer, we volunteer the answer.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we don't realize, oh shit, we could have built for that.
Right.
I just did someone else's job.
Yeah. Yeah. But then if I start billing, you'll pick up the client, you'll, you know what I'm saying? The client will get the answer from you for free. Right.
So what do? We stop answering the questions for free.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess
I'd be like, here, just sign this right now.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll give you the answer if you sign this right now.
Right. Right. Yeah.
But that won't work.
It wouldn't work.
If you're wearing work boots and work pants and you're swinging the hammer, it won't work. But if you're in a suit or stilettos, you can send the bill.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny because it seems like I was having a conversation with a designer or with a builder, and he was saying how we were exchanging stories, right? And he was saying like designers, be it male, female, whatever, they come from the office, they're trusted more, it seems like. You know what I'm saying? Or even architects. Like the client will go with what they say.
The client does that.
Of course.
But not in my books.
Like in terms of being trusted? Yeah, no.
Yeah.
I'm saying that it appears that the clients seem to trust them more.
Yeah.
Whereas the guy wearing the steel toes, whether we're looked down upon sometimes we're not taken as seriously.
Right? It's because we give up the experiences that we have freely.
Yeah, fair enough.
We need to, and that is, the good thing I would say about big construction, development construction, and political construction is they don't give up the information freely.
Right.
Okay. They bill for everything.
Really? Yeah, okay.
They're always billing, man. They know that they're always billing. So then they know that you build a roadway, you build a structure, you build whatever it is, and it's associated with public funds.
Right.
You're billing for everything.
Yeah, yeah.
But then you're building a custom home for a client. The client's always looking towards you for like the deals.
Yeah, that's true.
Consider expert plumbing and drains. When it comes to plumbing, you need someone who's not just skilled, but truly cares about the job they do. Someone like Aaron Bolin and his team at Expert Plumbing and Drains. Aaron has been in the trade for years, and he's built his reputation on one thing, commitment. Commitment to his craft, his crew, and most importantly to you, the client. At Expert Plumbing and Drains, it's not just fixing pipes, it's about delivering the best possible service every single time on every single project. So whether you're dealing with a leaky faucet, a stubborn drain, or planning a full plumbing overhaul, Aaron and his team are ready to tackle it all with skill, integrity, and a passion for excellence. Need help now? Call Expert Plumbing and Drains at 905-531-4111. That's 905-531-4111. Or visit them at www.expertplumbinganddrains.com and on social media at Expert Plumbing and Drains Canada. Experience the difference of working with a team that's dedicated to getting the job done right. Because at Expert Plumbing and Drains, your satisfaction is their top priority. You can also email Aaron directly at aaron@expertplumbinganddrains.com. Expert Plumbing and Drains, where expertise meets care. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life.
Actually, there's probably the second job that I ever went to quote to price out. No, sorry. That was another story. This is early within the first year of me kind of doing renovations. This is when I was still in college or just fresh out of college. I went to this couple's house, older couple, and it was a Friday night, I remember, and I spent 2 hours. It was for a bathroom renovation. If you're going to do this, what are you going to put underneath? What is there a shower membrane that has to go? Yes, a shower membrane. Is, you know, I gave him the, again, I was trying to make a good impression, trying to get the job. I came to find out later that they already had a contractor starting on Monday, but I was just there to educate them.
Yeah, I've seen those up before. Yeah,
I know. Yeah, I'm thinking, holy shit, man. Like, you know, again, live and learn, right? I didn't have any experience. I didn't know, but yeah.
I got a better one for you. I was quoting a job. I didn't get the job. I answered all the questions.
Yeah.
I delivered. I submitted the quote. And then he was nice enough to send me a message. I'm going to go with somebody else. It's great.
Yeah, yeah.
Wonderful. And then all of a sudden, he starts the job. And it was a few weeks later, he contacts me.
Yeah.
And he's like, I just want to pick your brain. My contractor is doing this, and I don't really agree with it. And I'm just looking at this email going, exactly. And I responded back by saying, apologies, but exactly. I'm not a resource anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
You decided to go with somebody else for whatever reason, whether their price was less or they had more experience or less experience or whatever it is. I don't care. Yeah. But my resources now don't belong to you anymore. And he was offended by that email.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, you hired somebody else, so you don't belong in my circle anymore. I don't answer any of your questions anymore.
Then you should just get him a retainer agreement. You know,
I was tempted to like, oh yeah, sure, I'll answer the question, yeah, exactly. Whatever. You want me to come by and site consult? Here's a bill. Pay it beforehand before I even show up.
Exactly,
yeah. It would never get, based of on the tone not. Of that email, of it was never going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was just trying to educate customers, like, you can't do that. You chose somebody for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Most of the time, money.
Exactly. Oh, right? Yeah, for sure.
And then you got to go with them. And
yeah.
You can't question if they're not doing something correctly.
Exactly.
And I've been hired because I do things more. I overdo things.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
I was specifically hired because of that. We know you're more expensive because you're going to go the extra mile. Thank you very much. Great.
That's why I enjoyed working in Forest Hill area of Toronto. I had very, very few clients there, but very loyal clients. And I appreciated that, right? Because they appreciated my work. Right. And
they pay for the less headaches.
Exactly.
That's what they pay for.
And I always say, they just want one thing, man. Just one thing. Perfection. That's it.
They just want it
just
done.
Just do your job.
Exactly how you said you're going to get it done.
Exactly.
And right. I pay you what you asked for.
Yeah.
And that's it. Simple as that.
And I find the lower the client's budget, the higher their expectations.
Oh, it happens all the time.
So, you know, I get it. They want their dollar to go as far. And, you know, but Jesus, man, like I got to eat too. You know, well, I have expenses. It's a tough world out there. I get it, but you know.
It's interesting, man. I wish you all the best, man. It's a challenging ride that you're going to take on. Just put the
it is what it is, yeah.
The bar down and keep your hands in the roller coaster.
Exactly.
And just go for it, right? But it's pretty cool. I like what you're trying to plan and doing and seeing what happens, right?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I'm
doing. You never know. You might get your former partner to take care of some demo projects for you or something.
Yeah, for sure. Like, it's not like we're not on a talking basis.
Yeah.
I have nothing against the guy. It's just I wanted to, you know, go my way, I guess. You know what I'm saying? I tried the partnership stuff. It was good while it lasted. And now I'm out on my own.
I just say partnerships like marriage, man. You just got
very much so, for sure.
You got to choose wisely. That's all it is, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Sometimes it works out well. Sometimes it doesn't.
I got all those warnings before I got into the partnership. But, you know, and again, I don't like wasting time. You know, I will listen to people and their advice. You know, people especially that are more experienced. They talk, I listen. But sometimes you got to do things on your own and try it out, right? I tried it and whatever. And again, I'm not saying I'm not opposed to partnerships. If people want to partner on certain projects, this and that, sure, we'll do it. But I know what to look for now too, right? So,
anything else you want to share before I get to the 12 questions?
No.
We covered a bit.
We covered a good amount, yeah.
And we didn't ruffle too many feathers except for TTC, which I personally think are a bunch of lazy people.
Yeah.
Whole organization, everything is lazy and it's just driven by the union and they just waste funds, I think. I don't know.
Anything institutional that size, I feel, you know, because think of it, there's no consequence. That's what I find. You know, a guy.
Money keeps coming in.
Exactly. And they could not do their work. They could hide away. And there are people that are professionals that are hiding away.
And he tells me about hiding away for a whole shift.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
On triple.
Yeah.
I'm like, dude, you don't feel bad? He goes, what are you, stupid, Manny?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
I'm making triple. I didn't do fuck all today.
Exactly. But I'm not built that way. I can't do that.
I can't do that.
Like the sign guy on the job site. Oh, best job in the world. You do nothing. I can't do that. I'd lose my mind. I feel like I'm wasting my life.
I totally forgot. Val, I'm wearing his t-shirt today, Legacy, out of, he's in Brooklyn, Anything that's broken. I haven't spoken to him. He's got a second page. He does a lot of Caribbean food.
Oh, right on.
Super nice guy, right? So he's doing a... I like seeing contractors do food pages.
Oh, yeah.
Joe from JR, he does that as well, too.
Oh, yeah.
I like seeing... Because, you know, I always tell clients, contractors are always a little bit more.
Yeah,
for some play music, some cook food, some tinker around with toys or whatever. Like, that's some people write. Like, there's more to contractors than what you really... Meets the eye, so to
for
speak,
sure,
right?
Yeah.
www.towerline.ca, info at towerline.ca. Ready for this?
I guess so.
Did I send you juice?
You did? I didn't write anything down. I wanted to be a little bit more panic.
You're on the spur of the moment, man.
Yeah, yeah.
A person you would trade places with for a day.
That's the hardest one. I don't really know. I don't.
Nobody?
No. Like, maybe there was a MotoGP racer.
Who?
Maybe Valentino Rossi.
Rossi.
Exactly, right? I was having
I would love to get one of his helmets with the face on it.
Yeah.
I would love when he pulled that off. That kid, well, he was a kid then.
Yeah.
What he pulled off was amazing. Which is interesting that you bring that up because Lewis is going with Ferrari now.
Yeah, that's right.
And when Rossi went to Ferrari, it was just a shit show. He fucking hated it. Or he went to Ducati.
Ducati, yeah.
And but he hated the bike.
Well, from what I heard as well, is they brought in a Ferrari engineer, a suspension engineer. So you're bringing a car suspension engineer to do more.
Why would they do that?
I don't know. But then the Desmond Sedici was notoriously hard to ride. Casey Stoner in 07 did a great job bringing that to the
But he was always fun. And then have you seen the documentaries Faster and everything?
Oh, yeah.
Fucking love that, eh? With the rival between, what's his name? Biagi,
Max Biagi.
Oh, fuck, yeah. What a prick, eh?
Yeah, I know. They're
that elbow, man. The way Rossi recovered down there.
That's right, yeah.
I was like, respect to Rossi for recovering that way because what he did was wrong, man. It could have been worse.
Very much so. You're not crawling. You're going at a good
speed.
You're going
200 clicks and you throw an elbow out to lose his balance, man? Come on, man. You don't do that. No. Anybody who's fucking doesn't follow MotoGP doesn't understand what you're saying, right?
No, of course not. But
so it's going to be interesting because everybody's talking about Lewis and Ferrari.
Right, yeah.
And I don't know if Ferrari's had the greatest track record of getting another at the end of their career.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I don't follow Formula One as much.
No, and I don't honestly, follow as much. Right?
But I dropped off the map with MotoGP as well.
Ever since Rossi. It was, yeah.
Yeah, ever since. Yeah, no, I used to race as well, right? Amateur in the Canadian Superbike Series. Nice. But that was my passion, right? And then maybe that's another reason why I pursued construction, right? Because it could garner a lot of, you could make a really good living so you could afford that stuff. But anyways, haven't done that yet. But I was more focused on motorcycle racing, even World Superbike, than I was Formula One. So Formula One, I have no idea. You know,
I just like watching it, but I don't know. I don't know what's going. I'm going to check out the movie that's coming out with Brad Pitt.
Oh yeah,
F1.
Later on
this year, right? Very good. I'm just intrigued about. I want to see what it's going to feel like. That's all.
Yeah, simple for sure.
But all right, so then I guess that brings us a guilty pleasure.
I guess watching YouTube videos. Yeah.
Anything?
Anything
at all? Anything specific? Or
no, just going on YouTube. Sometimes, you know, sometimes I'll come home at 10 p.m. I'll be up at 5, come home at 10. It's just, you get, I guess it's that dopamine drip. So I've cut that shit out cold turkey. But yeah, every now and again, I don't mind watching a few YouTube videos, but I realize it's not that
more entertaining than regular TV, man.
Yeah, very much so.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Least favorite tool?
The adjustable wrench. Just like that, you know, that silver adjustable wrench. It's just never, it's too tight, too loose. It tightens and it gets seized.
And when it slips and your hand goes into pain land.
Exactly. Whatever it may be. Like anybody who's adjusted or installed a few faucets under a sink,
they
knows
it.
Exactly what I'm talking about.
But
they're
all, plumbers are all about channel locks, right?
They prefer
the channel locks bite into certain finishes that you're not allowed to bite.
Yeah, exactly, right? Exactly. Well, when you're underneath the sink, you're kind of good.
Yeah, no. It's part of the design.
Yeah.
It's that kind of cross action.
Right.
Finish on it.
That's right.
No, you wrecked it. Yeah. Biggest risk you ever took?
I would say, I guess, so when I graduated my first program in college I was 21 back in 2014.
Okay.
And I got my mother, because I wanted to get into developments, whatever, and she had two income properties. I wanted her to pretty much loan me money. I bought a house and flipped it. Right. But, you know, you don't know how little you actually know. You know, I figured I went to school. I had a lot of construction jobs throughout the years.
You started opening it up.
Yeah. And it took me 7 months, 6 days a week. I was spending 16 hour days there and I did majority of the work myself. Right. And I pulled it through the finish line. It was great. But the thing is, though, against her accountant's best advice. She, instead of pulling a mortgage on one of the income properties, she pulled it out on the house that my sisters are living in too. Right. So it's like that to me is like, oh, no pressure there. Right.
Yeah. Because
if shit went sideways,
yeah,
it would have really gone sideways. But it was the best thing I ever did because I was able to get my truck, my tools, really launch my business.
That was back in 21?
I was 21 years old. Oh, okay. So it was back in 2014.
Okay.
So it went from 2014 into 15.
That was a good time to do it.
Very good time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then she didn't want to do the second one. You know, she felt like lightning doesn't strike twice. So it's like, screw it. Fine. I'll go on my own way. That's why I went back to school in 2016 with my second program and figured, you know, I'll just trail my own, blaze my own trail, so to speak. Nice. Right?
Best compliment you ever got?
Oh man. That one, I've had the most difficulty with that one. The best compliment would be, I guess, honestly, I realized that when we were talking about our workers, it was, I would say that a lot of my employees, especially when I was around the time that I was leaving my business, they would tell me that we're trying to keep up with you, right? Because I would hop on site and, you know, I'd spend weeks on end working side by side with them and then catching up with paperwork at night, right? But I think that's the biggest one because I always want to lead from the front.
That's a good
one. I'm going to get somebody to get dirty, I've been much worse, you know? So
we've all been there.
Yeah.
Favorite beverage?
Other than water, if we're going to go alcoholic, I'd say a Manhattan. Manhattan or an old fashioned.
Whenever it fails to make you laugh.
People running into things or falling down.
Even though there's pain attached to that, but it's not.
Yeah, pain, it's so just it's funny, man.
It's fine.
Whether it's me or somebody else.
Worst piece of advice you ever got?
Just get a job, be comfortable, you know, get your 9 to 5, get some benefits.
It's boring.
It is, man. Look, some people love that lifestyle. For me, I respectfully despise it. Right? A good buddy of mine, that's what he used to say. He just wants his 9 to 5, be comfortable, and drive a nice Buick. That was his thing, a Buick. And I used to think,
gold or something?
Yeah, exactly.
What color is he? Okay.
No kidding, right? And I used to get frustrated, like, why drive a Buick when you could drive a Lambo, when you could have a private jet? But no, man, for him, he's good with that.
Buick.
The great guy, I have a lot of respect for him. I'm truly happy that he has that lifestyle right now. But me personally, never wanted it.
That would have been a thing in the 70s, man, with Buick Skylark.
Yeah, like
The boat tail.
He would say that his grandfather, when he got his Buick back in the day when he was a kid, all his grandfather's buddies would, oh, man, they'd be raving about the car. So I guess that stuck with
that's
him.
A Buick.
Exactly. So, yeah.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt one day?
Yeah, I thought of that one. That was a little difficult. Attempt? I don't know, maybe anything finance or
finance, yeah.
Sales, maybe something with that. I don't know. Yeah,
you're kind of doing that in construction.
That's what I feel, right? So then, like, how outlandish do we want to go? Like, should I get into some aviation?
Rockstar,
yeah.
Daredevil. I don't know. This world's an oyster, right?
Yeah.
You
want
to choose? I don't know. Anything you want to try?
I was thinking of law at one point. You know,
it's depressing, dude.
It kind of is. You know,
it is.
I was fascinated by it when I was in high school. But I realized I can't just sit there. And the funny thing is, the irony of it is, like, I was reading like a lawyer when I was in my college programs because the amount of law courses we had to do and case studies. So I kind of had a little laugh, a silent laugh to myself. But yeah.
Favorite curse word?
Fuck. It's very versatile.
Exactly. Especially in construction. It's basically a 2x4. What is your favorite vehicle? Any mode of transportation?
Well, a vehicle in general, I'd say I love motorcycles. But if we're going to be specific about a truck or a car, aside from the one that I'm driving, I'd say like a Humvee.
Like an EV Humvee?
No. The original big bad diesel, the American military.
I'd like the Humvee, but the military Humvee.
The Humvee. Whereas the Hummer H1
yes.
is the squaxy.
I want the gas guzzling general engine, whatever it was.
Yeah,
the wheels
yeah.
and stuff. Like
AM want, General.
That's it. Yeah. I want that. Matt That's Black.
Exactly.
Can't find a parking spot for it.
Exactly.
Yeah, I want that thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I've loved that thing.
And since park I was it right kid. Next to every single Tesla that I can.
Yeah.
Right?
Or Prius. Yeah. Exactly.
Just put a smile on my face.
That's
right.
Right. Yeah.
What kind of bike would you get? Or do you still ride?
I had to sell my bikes, but I was a hair trigger away the last year that I was with my partner of buying one. Thankfully, I didn't. Right? Because I needed every dollar that I could muster. But yeah, what bike would I ride? If I were to race, I'd love to be racing the Beamer, the BMW.
Mm.
Or a ZX-10R, Kawasaki ZX-10R. I'm a Kawi guy, so I love that bike.
I'm liking Norton Commando, even the new one.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I like the Scrambler, not the Scramblers, but just like the cafe style. That's what I like that. I'm not a Fairing. I've never had a Fairing. I've got a 99 Monster, right?
Right on, okay.
So I never had Fairing, never had windshield, never had anything. And
right on.
I'd see guys and, like, how do you ride that thing? I was like, dude, you just tuck in and hold on and you ride. It's like,
exactly.
You can't be fully dependent on fairings and windscreen.
No, yeah, yeah. Again, for me, I've only come from the sport bike world. Yeah, I used to ride dirt bikes and everything, but I love sport bikes. It's just
you ever talk to a dirt biker and after years and years and he's like having a hard time walking because the knees are bust?
Yeah, probably, yeah. Exactly.
That's true. Change as many shoes as you want. You ain't fixing that shit.
Yeah, that's true.
That's why I never got into that, man.
Fair enough.
Last question. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at those pearly gates?
Something to the extent of like, damn, you far exceeded my expectations of you.
That'd be impressive, eh?
Yeah.
Stab, man, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me. I greatly appreciate it.
It's good, man. Say hi to Liz for me because I haven't seen her in a while. We've been trying to connect and I know she's way, where are they? They're
Between Kingston and Belleville.
So yeah, it's not east. Too bad.
No, 2-hour drive door to door for me.
Yeah,
it's not
that bad. Yeah, I'm envious of what she's got there and the farm and everything. I'm like, get off the grid. And downtown Corey ain't what it used to be anymore.
No, but not at all. Yeah, my dad says the same thing. He has no desires to go downtown, but he's in the city often enough, right?
So yeah,
it's not
like, come and visit.
Exactly, yeah. And we'll grab lunch or whatnot, or I'll go to his place, to their place out there, and it's a nice little getaway, right? I do enjoy going out there, but I'm not quite ready to live out there,
or out of the city. You need another decade or two, man.
Exactly, yeah.
Hopefully no failed projects or any bullshit. Just get it done.
Exactly. Simple as that, man. Exactly. So
thanks, buddy. I appreciate it, man. Good to meet you.
Thank you so much.
That's it. We're out of here.